We've been married 30 years, and I think I can say that I have been extremely supportive of the kind of work that he's been involved in, both when he was pastor of Ottawa and Wichita, Kansas, professor at Ottawa University, and in the 22 years that we've been here at Manchester College. Our daughters were born in Kansas, both of them at Ottawa, and our oldest daughter was born on Easter Day and has been known as Bunny ever since, although she does have another name. And our youngest daughter was born 4.5 years later in the same hospital that Bunny had been born in. When we came to Manchester, the girls were 4 and 9 years old, and so they really lived most of their lives. They lived most of their lives in Manchester, graduated from Manchester High School, but never got over their love of Kansas, and had a lot of feeling, I think, about our early days there and the time that we had as a family in Kansas that we seem not to have after we arrived in Manchester because of the different lifestyle that the job meant and the pressures that Blair had. We solved, I think, that problem a little bit by finding a place called Point Betsy where we went every summer. And that was sort of our time that was guaranteed to not be interrupted by the needs of an institution. And I'm sure that that's one of the most important, been one of the most important and perhaps formative things in the girls' lives in terms of picking up on our values and transmitting the same kind of a celebrative sense into their own family situations now. I'm 52 years old at the time of this recording. I feel I've been given a very rich and varied life with all kinds of opportunities to explore relationships. I think that if I have any genius at all, it may be for getting along with almost everybody. a very wide spectrum of people. It goes from rather menial situations to the other end of that continuum. I think I'm involved in a really complex network of relationships, and I sense the love of God flowing through almost all those, whether it's a very intimate thing or rather peripheral relationships. And if I've had anything to bring to Manchester College as an institution, I think it's that, if that can be called a gift, I think maybe that's what I've done the best, is to relate to many, many people who have, where we have the same focus of interest. I began to write in high school in the journalism department. I was in a bigger high school, a much larger high school than a college, and when I went to McPherson, there was opportunities for me to write. I edited the yearbook. I was a reporter on the paper for all the years that I was there. And I dreamed someday that I might become a writer. In the early years of our marriage, I published things in The Messenger and in other religious journals, mostly some poetry and small articles. But I hope someday to publish books. And I must say that I'm not sure that would have ever have come about without the influence of Anna Mao, who has been a close friend of mine since the first year that Blair and I were married, and who gave my manuscript to an editor with whom she had contact. This was a Doubleday editor, and they liked the book and published my first book, Free to Be a Woman, in 1971. I wrote a spiritual autobiography called In League with the Stones, which was too personal for as obscure a person as I am for a big publisher to do, but the Brethren Press published that, and some of my early growing up days and my experience at McPherson are in that book. When I talk about a spiritual autobiography, I think I should say that I think I've been given a gift of faith. I'm not sure where it came from or why it came to me in the way it did, but as long as I've been conscious of myself, I've been conscious of God in a relationship with Him. I think my mother, who did not appear to the Albrights or to the Good Brethren to be an especially religious woman, nurtured me in this. And during the Depression, she relied very heavily on Unity materials. Now, there might be somebody someday listening to this who knows what Unity is and understands that. But it's a very positive, hopeful, cheerful way of looking at faith. And I think that that found its way into my personality and into what already had was a part of me. At this late stage in my life, or beginnings, I'm beginning again, I'm seeking ordainment to the ministry, feeling that over a period of years I've had a ministry, especially, I think, to women, but a ministry through my writing also. Whenever I assess my life, where I have come to from where I started out, I always feel that I really owe a lot to McPherson College, to Aunt May for her for seeing to it that I got there, to a number of teachers there who were very kind to me and affirmed me in some particular abilities. So I think the people who stand out for me the most at McPherson were Della Lehman. I didn't have many classes from her, but we had a close friendship. Dr. Fleming taught me a great deal because I was under him for so long. Morris Hess appreciated my writing abilities, my ability with language. I was one of his top debaters and orators, as was Blair. And he continued to visit us in our home in Manchester until he died. And I'm grateful for, I think, one of the experiences at McPherson, there were so few in the student body when I was there. When I went, I think there were only about 232 or something like that in the fall of 43, which was right during the war. But I think that what happens in a situation like that is that if you can do anything at all, you have all kinds of opportunity to use any gifts of leadership or any talents that you might have, because you don't have all that much competition. So even though we may have been very ordinary, we did get to do many things and try our wings at different things. And I appreciate all that that meant and all that it has meant to me all during the rest of my life. I have one daughter who went to McPherson College and graduated from there. Our oldest daughter, Bunny, graduated from McPherson in 1970, I believe. Our youngest daughter had 1 year there. But I have nothing but basically good feelings about my total college experience and what that did for me all of my life. One interesting thing happened to me that was directly related to the McPherson experience. I said I majored in sociology, which was true, but I also had enough hours in psychology and English to have a double minor. When I taught school in Wichita, Kansas, I taught in a situation where they divided students for a 3-hour core program in the ninth grade level into groups homogeneously according to IQs. And I ended up with the highest IQ group out of 10 groupings. And I was just curious as to why that happened, and because I was a new teacher, and I would have thought that would have been saved for teachers who had spent some time there. And I asked the principal about it, and he said that I had the most variety in my college that anybody had had. And out of this variety, he just assumed, came a lot of general information that would be useful in the core for these gifted children. And it was a great teaching experience, and I've been thankful that that variety showed up. Another interesting thing that happened to me at McPherson were what I did in the summer times. One summer, 7 girls from McPherson and myself went out to Estes Park and worked in the National Y Camp. So we had a whole McPherson group that spent their summer in the mountains together, which was a very exciting time. And in the summer of my junior year, I went to Beloit, Kansas, and taught in the girls' prison there. Is that still going? The girls' industrial school. And here again, I'd had enough physical education that I could teach phys ed, although that was no great interest of mine, but I spent the summer directing the physical education program at the girls' prison, and it was one of the meaningful experiences of my life I saw what happened when people did not have the advantage of parents who loved them and homes that had basic Christian values operating. In closing, I just want to say that I'm grateful for my life. I have never wished that I had a more prestigious name on my college diploma. I've just been happy about the whole thing. Okay, all right. I have the happy privilege of being asked to say more about my children. That makes anybody very happy. I have two beautiful daughters, and I can substantiate that with their pictures if necessary. I've already told you that one daughter graduated from McPherson, one daughter attended there, but now they're both married. Our oldest daughter married Patrick Hill, who attended McPherson College, and they have settled in Wichita, Kansas. Bunny teaches in a beautiful private school there, Wichita Collegiate, and Patrick is with the New York Life Insurance Company. They have a son who is now 2.5 years old, who is everything that a grandchild ought to be. Bunny is completing her master's degree in English at Wichita State, has been all of her life a very fine student, has been, I think, a very fine teacher, has been one of those children who brought more joy than pain to her parents, and we're very proud of her. Our other daughter, Patty Dawn, had a rather checkered college career. She started at McPherson, but found that it was very difficult for her to be that far away from home. Then she had a year at Manchester. Then she felt it would be wiser to go away again. She went to Boston University and came back to Manchester and finished. In spite of the checkered career, she also had a very fine record. She received her master's from Indiana University at Kokomo in special education, and she has just about completed a reading specialist. She also has been teaching ever since she was out of college, and I think does a very beautiful job in the classroom. She married a young man who was in the Air Force when he married her, a Ray Magaro, who had no connection with any of our colleges or our background, but a very fine, stable young person who has since left the Air Force and flies commercially for Delta Airlines. They're settled in Atlanta, Georgia. And one of the happy things that Blair and I have been aware of is that while we never expect children to accept our values wholeheartedly, as our daughters are establishing their homes, we see a lot of our values being repeated, maybe a little differently than we might have hoped for. I mentioned Aunt May Albright in the earlier record, and I would like to say a little more about my great aunts and the influence that they had on my life. These were sisters of my father's mother. There were three of them who lived together. Aunt Tibby and Aunt May were maiden ladies, and Aunt Ida Wolf, they lived on her farm and lived with her family. They were very strict brethren ladies with very rigid rules about how children should be raised, although they didn't have any of their own. But they had enough nieces and nephews and great nieces and nephews that they felt perfectly at home in telling us all what to do and how to act and when to do it and when to act that way. Each summer, my sisters and I would go to the farm for a week or two. And I never did figure out if they wanted us to come or if the folks wanted us to go, but we always ended up there. And if everything else failed during the year, we got our brethren indoctrination during those 2 weeks. We were not allowed to have pop in a bottle because beer was sold in bottles. There were all sorts of little rules of that sort that we were made to live by. But one of the outstanding experiences that has stayed in my mind and has become a family story happened in my 10th year. My mother had sewed very hard for us to get us ready for the summer, and she had made shorts for us. Now, this would have been in about 1935, and the aunts had very rigid ideas about what kind of apparel little girls wore, and shorts was not included in that list. But on the first morning that I was on the farm, I got up and put on my shorts and a halter blouse and went out in the barnyard feeling like I had the world with the tail with a downhill pull, and my Aunt Ida was out there doing the chores. She didn't make a great appearance that early in the morning. Long dress, her hair hadn't been combed. On one foot she had an old shoe, and on one foot a four-buckle overshoe, and in each hand she was carrying a bucket of pig slop. Just as she looked up and saw me in my shorts, she saw the milkman driving up the long lane. And she looked at me and she said, "You get in the house, you ain't fit to be seen." Well, I was young, but I knew who out there in the barnyard wasn't fit to be seen. But I stood behind a tree and waited there, really angry at that put-down, until the milkman had left. And, of course, the first thing I told my parents about was how Aunt Idy had reacted to my shorts. But in spite of these little feelings that we had, that they were in control of our lives somehow, even from afar, there was also the sense that this control was based on a very firm faith, a deep belief in something important, that we wouldn't go far wrong if we sort of stuck by the things that they talked about and told us about. And I have memories of seeing the aunts at Love Feast and at places like that in their very simple clothes, and yet I also have memories of them coming to our home to take care of people in sickness, of taking food to people, of driving long distances to hear who they thought might be a great preacher, of giving money to people that needed help, of buying my dad a suit so he could go to an uncle's funeral, of helping us with college, and of doing all these things that come out not just out of kindness, but also out of basic Christian convictions about our responsibility to each other.